passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another draft podcast on the Baseball America podcast feed. I'm Carlos Glazo, joined by Peter Flaherty. In this new year, our first draft show of 2024, we're recording this just a few days after New Year's. And I guess this is officially the second year of us on this podcast, Peter. I'm very much looking forward to it and glad to be back on the mic with you. How you doing?
You and me both. I'm doing great. I had a great Christmas and holiday season. It was filled with family, time with my girlfriend, a lot of college football, NFL. Couldn't have asked for a better week plus rejuvenation, but I'm really fired up to get back in the saddle. And I love the jokes we can make about it being the new year and having it be year two. So I'm very excited.
Yeah, absolutely. My holiday was similar to yours, except with significantly less football, I'm sure. So hopefully you enjoyed that.
I caught an in-person. I went in person. I went to a primetime bowl game.
Well, that's more fun. Where'd you go?
It was between two future conference opponents, and I know what everyone's thinking. It's not Oklahoma and Arizona. I went to the Fenway Bowl, the Wasabi Fenway Bowl, at 11 a.m. on a Thursday.
Yikes.
In the pouring rain, and stayed for dynamic warm-ups and through the trophy ceremony, but my Eagles came out on top, so it was all worth it.
Congratulations to you on that one, Peter. I know you're following that one very avidly. You know, maybe I'll find something to love as much as you love your BC Eagles football. But I love January, Peter, here at BA. This is your second January, right? We just weren't doing the podcast last year. January's fun because I feel like in November, December, it's a lot of work on the prospect handbook. It's a grind. Like, everyone's looking forward to the break. The break happens and we come back, and I just love the fresh start to the year, like looking ahead, planning content, thinking about the college. Like, the college season is really right around the corner. Teddy a few days ago had a piece, 45 things to know about college baseball with 45 days to go. And I saw that number and, like, it makes sense. I always know February 15th or so is around when we're rolling for college baseball. It's been the case for forever. But the 45 days aspect of it, I was like, man, we're really close. So I'm itching to get out to a field to see some of these players. And I'm looking forward to a lot of the content we're going to be putting out this year on the draft side, on the college side, and on this podcast specifically. It'll be fun to do this podcast regularly in a draft cycle. I'm looking forward to that very much so. But where are you at on just January in general? What's your hype level for college baseball? And are you like a New Year's resolutions guy or no?
I'm a 20 out of 10 on the excitement scale. Mm. I'm kind of the 20 out of 10 mentality.
We need to not have you use the 10 scale though. That's a little.
I'm a 90 on the 20-80
there
scale.
There we go. Or
I should have said 100. That would have been way better. But I'm super fired up, both for college baseball and all of the fun stuff we have planned. We had a big staff-wide meeting yesterday, and hearing all of the stuff that we have planned, both for January, February, March, April, the whole college cycle, the prep stuff. There's going to be so many rankings lists and pieces coming out that I'm excited to create and also read. So I'm very fired up. It was nice, again, to have like a little break, but once Christmas ended, I was kind of getting that itch to get back. So very excited to be back on the pod. I'm not a New Year's resolution guy. Mm. I more just kind of head into each year just trying to continue to be a good person. That's can't go wrong.
Love
with
that.
I gotta keep my makeup solid, and then I think stuff just falls into place.
That's huge. I definitely used to be a New Year's resolutions guy. I feel like now I like have kind of my systems in place. I try to just continue plugging along there, sharpen them up if needed. But there is just something refreshing about the new year. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to college baseball. One thing I wanted to talk about on this show before we got into some maybe like look ahead content and maybe just refamiliarizing ourselves with the board. We released a 2019 redraft over the holiday, and part of the reasoning for releasing it then was I've always wanted to do a redraft. Part of it was just like getting some distance in between my first draft, my first few drafts. I guess 2018 was kind of the first official draft I covered for BA. But we did a 2019 redraft, and it's kind of a combination of getting far enough away from the drafts to feel confident enough about how players have panned out, and also finding a spot in the calendar where it makes sense, because a lot of our content from like January to March is preseason content, college preview stuff. Looking at this, it just never feels like there's a great time to do the retrospective and review of the draft, which I always hated because I feel like it's super important. Just because, again, like we talked about after the 2023 draft, it's very hard to analyze a draft class in the moment because you really just need to wait and see. So it was fun to do this piece on the 2019 class, redraft, see where players would go, see if there were any takeaways. But really what I think my biggest takeaway is, like, even now, 4.5 years later, 5 years later, there are a lot of players where I didn't feel super confident one way or another about who I would rather have. We'll link to this piece in the show notes if you guys haven't seen it over the holidays, so maybe you can like follow along as we're talking through this. But I'm curious what you thought about the 2019 redraft. The 2019 class specifically looks way better now than it did at the time. It's basically known as like this strong top six group of players headed by Adley Rutschman and Bobby Witt Jr. And after that, it really got criticized for lack of depth. Some of the worst college pitching prospects the industry had seen in quite a long time. And I think even with just George Kirby, the class has been better on that front than anyone could have expected. But Nick Lodola has been solid. Alek Manoah was a Cy Young candidate, even though his career has been a little bit more up and down. But do you have any thoughts at all on the 2019 redraft, the process in general, or who you would take with hindsight?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say it was a really interesting piece that you put out. I think reading through it and your rationale for each, it was a good refresher for me. And then obviously, as you said and put it perfectly, the talent in this class is very impressive. And at the top, I would find it really hard to debate Adley at one. And then after 2, 3, 4, like with 2, 3, 4, I felt there's an argument to be made for, I thought, any one of those guys in their respective spots, with, I think it was Bobby Witt.
Bobby Witt Jr. I had the White Sox with Corbin Carroll and then the Marlins with Gunnar Henderson. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I thought you could shuffle them any which way. You've got the rookies of the year with Gunnar and Corbin and the AL and NL respectively. And then Bobby Witt, I mean, he's a stud in his own right. He went, I think it was 30, hit 30 bombs and stole 49 bags this year at 276. He's an outstanding player. And then George Kirby, obviously kind of headlining the pitching class. And he's been excellent in his first couple of big league seasons. So I thought it was an interesting list. I thought what I thought was most, I don't want to say funny because that's not the right adjective, but it was cool seeing or interesting to see you having the Rangers take Riley Green instead of Josh Young. I'm sure that's where like the comments on like Instagram were probably like,
you know, Rangers fans were really pissed about that actually. And I didn't really think too much about, like, there were a couple players like going through this where I just happened to put the player they initially took at that pick and then moved off of it. Like, I think my first draft, I had Daniel Espino actually going to the Guardians or the Indians at the time. I didn't even really think of Josh Young with the Rangers. Like, I think it's perfectly defensible if you wanted to have Young. I have him right now 9 to the Braves, one spot later. But I think it makes all the sense in the world if you wanted to put him at 8. I really just thought Riley Green, when healthy, just flashed a ton. I think he's got a lot of upside moving forward. But Rangers fans certainly were not happy with me that I did not have them taking Josh Young again.
I also like, for the sake of the piece, though, like shuffling it a little bit and not going full chalk, because I mean, for the sake of the exercise, like, it is fun to think of like how Riley Green would fit in the Rangers system and how Josh Young would fit. I think it was you had him to the Braves. But like Riley Green, again, like his good flashes and his flashes are really freaking good. And he had a productive season in his own right. I think he hit .288 with 35 or so extra base hits. Good defender in the outfield. Like, he's going to be an impact big leaguer. And I get the recency bias with both how productive Young was in the regular season and then also how excellent he was in the postseason and a cornerstone on a World Series winning team. But Riley Green's a really good player. And then Volpe with the Giants. That would be a really dynamic left side of the infield with Casey Schmidt if you move him back to third where he was, because you're basically looking at a shortstop at third, and then Volpe's Volpe. He's an outstanding defender. I really like the offensive profile at the plate and what he projects to be. So it was fun for a minute to envision what they would look like, especially Gunnar on the Marlins too. Being a Marlins guy, he'd be a big time piece for him. So
yeah, they could use a bat. What's interesting with the redraft in general, and I guess that pick specifically, Marlins and Gunnar Henderson, is I don't really know how much credit, like of the 100% of credit there is to divvy up between the player himself and player development, like coaching. Obviously, I would imagine a large majority of the credit goes to the player, but there is something to Baltimore's hitting development, and the Marlins have really struggled on that front, whether it's player evaluation or hitting development within Miami's system. So, like, thinking about whether or not Gunnar Henderson would even be the player he is today had he been drafted by the Marlins is another really interesting one to me, because I just do think Baltimore has something figured out given all the bats they produce. Now, granted, they've picked a lot at the top of the draft. They've had access to elite talent, but Miami has as well, and the players they've taken just haven't quite panned out quite as well. And again, like, Henderson was initially drafted with the 42nd overall pick in the second round. So certainly the Marlins would love to have an impact hitter like this in their system. But I think it's interesting too, circling back to a few things you touched on, you could make a case that the Orioles have the number one and number two best players in this draft. And that in and of itself is just kind of ridiculous. Like, I think that there's a chance Bobby Witt Jr. in 5 years winds up being the best player of this group still. And I've forever been the highest on Bobby Witt Jr. But it, like you said initially, it's hard to go with anyone other than Adley Rutschman. He's produced the most WAR of any of these players so far. He was the top pick then. He's maybe already the best catcher in baseball. Just very easy to put him there. And then, like you said, Gunnar Henderson could easily have gone too. I wanted to go back to Volpe at 10 as well, because Anthony Volpe and CJ Abrams, I struggled placing one versus the other. And I just went back to a higher confidence in Volpe's defensive work at shortstop than CJ Abrams. But I will admit, I am more skeptical on both of these players with their offensive profiles. Neither have been above average hitters yet. It's obviously very early. CJ Abrams has a chance to be a dynamic base runner. But I still wonder, like, which of these players you'd rather have moving forward. And I'm curious where you're at with Abrams at this point.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really interesting debate, because you mentioned, and what I think, if I were doing this exercise too, what would have Volpe over Abrams for me would be the defense and the confidence to play an impactful shortstop position going forward. And Volpe showed he was able to do that and step in year one as the starting shortstop for the New York Yankees as a 21-year-old kid, which I think is incredibly impressive. And, I mean, he's a Gold Glove caliber defender. And I do think that he is better offensively than what he showed this year. I think that the power was a pleasant surprise. The fact he was able to hit 23 doubles and 21 bombs, pretty high K rate. But again, while Abrams, I think, has the raw speed and maybe more of a dynamic base runner, Volpe has extremely advanced baseball sense. He's at least a plus runner in his own right. He's going to impact the game plenty on the bases. And so I'd go Volpe. I'm a really big Anthony Volpe fan. Even just going back to when, gosh, at this point, I think he was maybe even just 18 or 19 years old. And he spoke to our area code team when I was an associate scout with the Yankees and on that area code coaching staff. The Matt Hyde, who runs the whole show, and he's the Northeast area supervisor for the Yankees now. He brought in Volpe to speak to the team, and just kind of the makeup and the headspace that he had, even at such a young age, was really, really impressive. And I think the best word to describe him is he's a winner. And I'm always going to be a big fan of him as a player and also a person, but, long-winded answer short, I'd probably go Volpe right now, but
yeah,
man, it's close with him and Abrams.
Yeah, no, it's interesting to think through that one. A few other takeaways or things I wanted to mention about this redraft. I don't really think back on the Twins drafts and think, man, that they've really hit it out of the park, because Keone Cavaco in this draft in the first round was a bit of a whiff. And then Aaron Sabato in the first round was also not a great first round pick. But I think looking at some of their later round picks and some of the players who have just been really impressive, especially when you consider their draft capital, shows you like you can still win a draft by even obviously you want to hit on your first round pick, but the draft is not over on day one. I know the coverage of the draft falls off quite a bit after day one. It can be a bit of a slog, but there are a lot of really good players who are going to be drafted after the first day. It's so important to have like faith in your scouts after that point to make these decisions on players. Like getting some of the guys that they got further down, Edouard Julien, Louis Varland, 15th and 18th rounders. I mean, Matt Wallner was not a super late pick, but he's included in this redraft. Spencer Steer and Edouard Julien, I have them both in the top 15 here. That was a third rounder, and again, an 18th rounder with Edouard Julien. Like, those are some really savvy picks. I think the Twins have done a nice job in recent years, not even going beyond the 2019 draft, of getting some good value with college pitching in later rounds. That shows up in their top 30 in their farm system right now. So it seems like they're one of the teams that have done a nice job in these later rounds. And then one other one I had for you, Andrew Vaughn being at 21, it kind of just emphasizes how much you have to hit as a first baseman to warrant going as high as Andrew Vaughn did. He originally went number 3 overall. He was ranked 3rd in the draft class at the time. I don't know if like the number 3 spot specifically was consensus, but he was certainly consensus top 6 player in that elite tier for the industry. But thinking about Andrew Vaughn now and thinking about Spencer Torkelson in the 2020 draft, a year later, it just has me a bit more scared on that profile than maybe I would have been 4 years ago. And it also makes me look towards our 2024 list right now and seeing Nick Kurtz at number 1 in that. And I'm wondering, man, like, do we really want to go with a first baseman this high again? At the same time, loving Nick Kurtz's hitting ability and power, but the bar to clear offensively at that position in the major leagues is just so high. You absolutely have to be the hitter you are advertised as.
Yeah, it's a high one. And I think that it's an interesting hypothetical, because you have Torque going 1-1 and then Andrew Vaughn, who went 3rd. And Vaughn had, I think, what was his most productive season to date as a big leaguer this year. And then Torkelson also kind of found a groove as well. But you're talking about with them, two like 6 feet, 6 foot one right-handed hitters. With Kurtz, you've got a 6'5" left-handed hitter. And I think that the offensive profile is on par, if not better than both of them, maybe not as dominant as like a Torque was or maybe even Andrew Vaughn. But I mean, he is, again, he's 1-1 for a reason. And then defensively, Kurtz is, he's super nimble over around the bag at first. He moves really well for his size. He's pretty soft on his feet. We talked about it a lot, but like, you could use him and throw him in a quarter outfield spot and he'd hold his own. That he will not play there unless it's a severe pinch, both obviously at Wake and then professionally. But like that's how clean of a mover and how good of a mover he is. But again, like you are going to really, really have to hit and rake. Like there is a reason why Vaughn went 21 in a redraft. So
yeah, well, what's interesting too is like I think both these players could be solid players. They might even be like solid average players now. That but they've both only been like close to league average hitters in their best seasons, and they're still young. I mean, Andrew Vaughn will be entering his age 26 season. Spencer Torkelson is going to be entering his age 24 season. So there's a chance they're still kind of nearing their peak years. But let me run down some of the first round college first basemen in recent years and tell me what you think of this list. And I'm going to start off with Spencer Torkelson and Jacob Berry. They were both selected as third basemen. I'm counting them as first basemen for this. They played first base in college. They play mostly first base in pro ball. I need to make sure that's the case for Jacob Berry. Actually, I think he's played more third than I expected, but either way, Jacob Berry, sixth overall in 2022, Spencer Torkelson 1-1 in 2020. All right. Now switching over to the college first baseman, we got Nolan Shanwell, 11th overall in 23, Aaron Sabato, 27th overall in 2020, Andrew Vaughn, 3rd overall in 2019, Michael Toglia, 23rd overall in 2019, Brendan McKay, a bit different there given the two-way factor, but he went 4th overall in 2017, Pavin Smith, 7th overall in 2017, Evan White, 17th overall in 2017, Chris Shaw, 31st overall in 2015, Casey Gillespie, 20th overall in 2014. Like those are all the college first basemen that are popping up on our draft database in the bonus pool era. That list does not excite me at all, Peter.
It's a murky list. Like the verdict is probably still out on Torque and Vaughn. Like I think,
and even Jacob Berry, I would give him a little bit longer of a leash. But his stock is significantly lower than it was prior to the draft.
Yeah, there's absolutely work to be done for Berry. But like you said, It's a pretty thin list. And like, again, with Vaughn and Torque, like there's certainly all-star potential there. I wouldn't be shocked in the slightest if either selected to an all-star game at some point. But again, though, like you're going to have to feel really, really confident in pounding the table for a college first baseman. And granted, like Nick Kurtz is probably the guy to do it for, whether or not he goes 1-1, barring something pretty unforeseen, I'd say he's a pretty slam dunk bet to go in the first 10 or so picks. But again, like you're going to have to feel really, really confident in his ability to hit, which I feel like at this point, like there's one thing, and it's annoying that it's always kind of like itching my brain when talking about Kurtz. I wish just at some point he played in the Cape, even if it was for 2 weeks, or he played with USA, or he did anything with a wood bat. And it's not a knock on his stock. That's not going to affect where I have him in my own personal draft database and my own board. But it's like, man, I really wonder
what he would have done. That is a really good point, because we're talking about the position, the amount of conviction you need to have in the hitting ability for a first baseman. And that added track record with a wood bat against that sort of competition in those evaluation periods is super important in general. And if we're talking about a profile that, like, if you don't hit, you just aren't valuable at the major league level. If he had gone and torn up the Cape, if he had gone and just been the best player on the field with USA Baseball, like, it would make you feel a little bit better. And I feel great about Nick Kurtz's hitting ability right now, but I also felt really good about Jacob Berry's hitting ability. So I'm just maybe going to push the brakes a little bit more on first base profiles overall. And I'm really curious to see how the industry will view this one moving forward throughout the spring. Did you have any other takeaways through this? I mean, there are some winners and losers. We have that supplemental piece on the site. I put the Orioles. I mean, I think it's an excellent draft. The D-backs had a ton of picks this year. They had 7 picks in the first 75 selections, and they went about 50% with their top 10 round picks. So that was huge for them. Obviously, Corbin Carroll being a top 5 pick and going 16th overall is a coup. I had the Twins as a winner, given some of their late round picks, and despite Keone Kavaka in the first round. And then I also had the Mariners and the Tigers as winners in this draft. The Mariners with George Kirby, Brandon Williamson, Isaiah Campbell, Levi Stahl, a bunch of big leaguers. The Tigers, they had a few late picks that were impressive. Kerry Carpenter, they have a big leaguer and 11th rounder, John McMillan. He didn't sign with them, but he reached the majors with the Royals. So it's not full credit for them, but good haul for the Tigers too.
Yeah, I mean, as a whole, I thought the piece was really fun to read and interesting to think about, and it created a bunch of hypotheticals in my head, and I highly suggest anyone listening to give it a read, because it's a great one.
Well, thank you, Peter, and appreciate you guys if you check it out on the site. But let's look ahead towards 2024, this spring, this college season. Do you know where you're heading yet early in the college season? I'm thinking I might be going back to Texas for the first week for the Shriners College Showdown. I'm not sure exactly what they're calling it, but that has been a really good tournament. And last year I saw a ton of good players, and it's not locked in. I still need to probably solidify the first few weeks, maybe first month, few months of the season for me for travel. But I am excited to start looking at some schedules and figuring out where the spots to be are.
Yeah, that'll be a good one. I think this year for Shriners, you'll get Arkansas, Oklahoma State, Michigan, and Oregon State. So, like, you'll get Bazana, Benj, Hagan Smith, really that whole Arkansas.
It's funny that Hagan Smith will be back again, because I've seen him last year as an underclassman. He just shoved. So this year in his draft year, it'll be fun to see him. And obviously getting Bazana will be huge. It's very hard to get out to Oregon in general. Like, I don't think in 2019 I saw Adley at all in the spring. I saw him in the summer with Team USA, but just it's harder to get out into the Northwest, I'd say, for compared to others. Like, typically I find myself in SEC country, I guess.
And you'll get him good too against Hagan Smith or however the schedule lines up. Probably, mm-hmm. I mean, you'll get him hopefully against one of Hagan Smith, Brady Tigert, or Mason Molina. And then with Oklahoma State, like, you'll get Benj. Michigan has a couple of interesting underclassmen with Mitch Voigt and Jonathan Kim. But that's a loaded field. Where I'm headed, I plan on heading to Scottsdale for the MLB tournament. I think it was previously like the MLB 4. I think it's just the MLB Desert Classic this year. I could be wrong on the name, but I'll get Kansas State and Cal, who are kind of the headliners from a prospect standpoint. So I'll get Tyson Nabors, Kalen Culpepper, Caleb Lomavita, Rodney Green with them. And then I'll also get a look at Grand Canyon and Zach York, who's an interesting 25. The bat is very real with him. And they've also got a very fun crop of freshman arms. Grand Canyon does. And then Ohio State has a couple of fun wings as well with Gavin Bruni and Landon Beetlesheese. And then BC I'll get, USC I'll also see with Austin Overn. So I hope to be leaving with a lot of good looks at these higher end prospects, and then dipping my toes into the water with the 25 guys a little bit and refamiliarizing myself with them after I saw them over the summer.
Yeah, I was just scanning down our board currently when you were talking about some of the players that we're going to be able to see in the next few weeks. And I think of the top 50, I believe I've seen every player in person except for Caleb Lomavita. And I can't remember if I saw Ben Hess in person.
Hess was a rare get. Like, I think I know his season got cut short last year, so it would have added to kind of the difficulty around seeing him. But
yeah, I'm trying to think if there would be any, if I would have seen him like as a high schooler. But I think that this might be one of the better years for me in terms of players I've seen in person, because like 48 out of our top 50 seems well above average, unless I'm just like underselling how much I get to see these guys throughout the showcase season as high schoolers and like USA. But that makes me feel, because typically there are a couple key players that I like haven't seen. Oh no, the one that I haven't seen in person is Bazana. So that makes the Texas event even better for me. So I can get the Peter and Jeff Travis Bazana hype and get on your level.
I don't want to stick unfair expectations on him or anything
too
like
late,
that.
Too late, my friend.
I think you're going to be blown away leaving Texas by what you see. He's the real deal, Holyfield. But no, you've got me beat for sure with 49 out of 50. Probably will end up being 50 out of 50. But if we expand it to even 65, I'd ding a lot of guys on the 50 to 60 portion with seeing them on the Cape. But over the Christmas break and holiday break, I was on a little bit of a sophomore eligible draft kick, so to speak, and digging into the sophomore eligible class, because there are a bunch of interesting ones. I think the one that really stood out for me that I did a deep dive on was Tennessee outfielder Dylan Drying. He ended up hitting his way into an everyday role last year for Tennessee, posted a very respectable slash line of 295, 433, 621 with 15 extra base hits. More walks than Ks. The approach really stands out. he's a super strong, like wiry, like built kid, like at 5'11", 197. Not to sound like a creep, but like I went to his Instagram and like zooming in on his forearms, like his forearms are jacked and super vascular. And like, he is like, I'm not going to word it like this when writing a report, and maybe I will, and maybe I should have, but like, he's just jacked. Like, yeah. He's jacked at 5'11", 197. I really like the operation in the box. He's got plus bat speed. I think like this fall he popped a 115 exit velo in a game. I think it was a scrimmage against Virginia Tech. If it wasn't Virginia Tech, I'm sorry for them catching astray, but he posted an in-game 115, and with the bat speed coupled by that seemingly added impact, I'm pretty excited about what he might be able to do from a production standpoint this year. And then also like the swing decisions are really good. The overall chase rate last year was only 19%. And then the bat to ball skills are above average, borderline plus. Like last year's, his overall in zone contact rate was 89. It was 90 against fastballs, and he's just got a really good feel for the barrel, and defensively he's really improved, and he'll be able to stick in the outfield. It might be left field, which is a little bit of a,
do you know where we're expecting him to play this spring? It seems like Tennessee always has some fun outfielders for us to watch, and I'm just looking at the video that you posted with your, there's a, Peter has a nice post on Twitter here breaking down kind of a lot of the stuff he's talking about here. If you want to check that out, you can also get a good look at the swing here, and it looks pretty fun, so I'm excited about Dreeling now as well.
Yeah, he's a fun one. I think, like, again, he's a sophomore eligible kid. I think, like, right now he's a top five rounder, but I would not be shocked if he really pops off at Tennessee this year and plays his way into like a top three round type. Like late day one might be a little bullish, but like top 3 to 4 rounds, I could see him going there for sure.
Are there any players that you're most excited to see, or are there any teams that you're most excited to see this spring? Obviously, you give us the college competition dynamic on this podcast as well. And like outside of Wake Forest, we all know Wake Forest is loaded. What other teams do you think are the most like prospect laden entering the spring for college? Because for me, the college season is always great because most of the summer is spent focusing on the high school players. In college, I really feel like I can get in the weeds and refamiliarize myself with college players that I haven't focused on in a while, or just being exposed to them for the first time. So it's always a fun experience for me. And I feel like you are kind of well ahead of me on the college side. So which teams, which players are you most looking forward to seeing?
So you hit on it first with Wake. We've got 3 in the top 10 right now. But that's surprise, insane. Surprise. but surprise, surprise, LSU is going to be really good again. Yeah, you've got Tommy White, Thatcher Hurd, Gage Jump, Luke Holman, even some of their supplemental pieces like Jared Jones, Josh Pearson. They've got a strong freshman class with Cameron Johnson being the headliner. And some other guys projected to make an impact right away. They're going to be a premium get for anyone this spring, and they're going to have so much heat following them on a week-to-week basis. They're going to be really good again, both from a team standpoint and then also from a draft prospect standpoint as well. And then in thinking elsewhere, Arkansas's rotation is really intriguing, and I think that they're rather underrated in my mind, just because you talk about these stacked rotations with Wake Forest, with Hartle, Massey, and gosh, I don't know why I'm blanking on the last Burns. Chase Burns. So, yeah. Burns, Massey, and Hartle. And then Iowa with Morgan Brecht and Obermueller. I think that those two get a lot of the shine, and rightfully so, but Arkansas is right there in that like three-headed monster territory. And I know that they think that's what they have, and rightfully so, with Brady Tigert, who will hopefully be healthy for the whole year.
His year over year improvement with walks was really impressive. His freshman year in 2022, he walked 5 batters per 9 as a full-time reliever. He had 6 starts and 4 appearances out of the bullpen in 2023, just 25 innings. But he cut the walk rate from 5 per 9 in 22 to 2.8 per 9 in 23. And like virtually every pitcher in this class on the college side, the strikes are going to be a question. And that step forward in a partial season last year was really loud, and he has really exciting stuff. So if he's able to just put it across the plate more often, I imagine he's going to be moving up boards, especially if he can hold down that starter role.
Yeah, if he can prove himself, you hit on it at the end. If he can prove himself as a starter and stay healthy and continue to show that advancement he made in the strike throwing department, that's a day one guy in my mind, if he's able to do that. And then Mason Molina is another one that right now he screams like back end of the rotation, workhorse, innings eater. But like the stuff is sneaky with him, like 6'2 lefty, fastball will sit like 89, 92, bump a three, but he stays behind the baseball really well. And last year he averaged over 19 and a half inches of IVB on the fastball. And it helps it play up, especially when elevated. And it's an advanced arsenal. He's another guy that the pitchability is advanced with him. And I think he's a fun arm. I think he's going to be a really safe, like pretty high floor type pick on early in day two, three to five, 4 to 6 kind of makes sense for him right now, probably more 4 to 6, but, and then obviously you've got the headliner with Hagen Smith, and you saw him last year, you'll see him again. It's an electric arsenal, and he was reportedly up to 100 this fall. That slider is a legit plus pitch as well. And then he also flashed a Heidi's changeup that I'm pretty excited about and excited about its future. And he allegedly put on, I was listening to an interview. I forget where I heard it, but I was listening to an interview with Coach Thompson from Arkansas. And he was talking about how Hagen Smith put on, I think 10 to 15 more pounds of muscle, this off season. So like he, like Coach Thompson said, like he is a horse, or I think it was Coach Hobbs, but Coach Hobbs was saying, you know, he's like a legit horse now, and I'm excited to see what he looks like come February.
You know, another player that you're probably going to see week one who I'm a bit jealous of is Kalen Culpepper at Kansas State. Like looking into him more and getting some feedback on scouts this offseason about defense, like he's an intriguing hitter to me. I'm curious what you think about him at this stage.
Yeah, I saw him over the summer. I saw him like for two games, so it was a minuscule sample size. Like,
yeah, I saw him with USA Baseball a bit, but I feel like he kind of went under the radar a little bit for me with all the other guys I was seeing more frequently.
Yeah, like it's an exciting blend right now of speed and athleticism. And I think over the summer he made a few tweaks to his swing. He got a little bit deeper in his base, pulled his hand set in a little bit tighter to the body, and a slightly more open front side. But the bat speed is plus. I really like how he rotates and he really finishes the swing. And by that, like no one's going to see it, but like I'm like rotating all the way around and like finishing my swing and really, really finishing it. Mm-hmm. And it's good torque. And I think that this spring he's going to make the move from third base to shortstop that was formerly held down by Nick Goodwin, a draft pick this summer. But when I saw him this summer, I liked what I saw defensively. He's got soft hands. The actions are pretty clean. He does a good job of working around the baseball. And the arm is a legit 60, whether you stick him at short or third, no matter where he ends up professionally, that arm is a 6 on the left side of the infield. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really enticing as well. And right now, like for me, he's a middle of day one type guy, but I mean, that first weekend, he's going to have a lot of heat on him. And like high ranking heat as well. You're going to have obviously area guys, and then, but they're going to be cross checkers and directors there for sure. So he's going to have a big time chance to start the season off on a right foot, on the right foot.
Another name that I'm excited about who is, I should be seeing plenty of just given where he's playing at, but it's Virginia first baseman and catcher Ethan Anderson. I'm curious what your opinions are on him, because he did not play well in the Cape this summer with Harwich. He hit 195, 253, 293 in 22 games. So a reasonable sample. Still, 22 games in baseball is never a lot. But I just consistently talk to scouts who love this kid. His track record in production at Virginia is significantly better than that brief Cape stint. He hit 302, 403, 497. In 2022 as an 18-year-old. He jumped from 5 home runs that season to 15 home runs in 2023. He improved across the board in the triple slash categories, especially the power, as you'd expect from the home run total. He hit 375, 469, 649. Again, 15 homers. He went from 12 doubles to 26 doubles. So the performance in the ACC is good. I'll be curious what the defensive evaluations of him are, like where people are profiling him in pro ball. But he seems like a guy who everyone I talk to just seems to like. And that's another player that, again, I should be able to see a decent amount of time, just given the fact that Virginia's only a couple hours down the road.
Yeah, like he's an interesting one. And I'm willing to kind of give him the benefit of the doubt on the lack of K performance. Obviously, You can't not take it into account. And I know that I'm sure he wish he had a better showing this summer. But he's hit everywhere he's been, whether it was as a high school senior in the Futures League with Vermont when he hit 427, or his true freshman year at UVA, or this monster sophomore year that he just had at UVA. And I think in his four-game stint in national team training camp, he had a solid showing. I think it was like 4-for-11 is what I saw. So, I mean, he's hit everywhere, with the Cape being the exception. Granted, the Cape is where he's faced the best pitching and the highest-end talent. So It's obviously tough, but I mean, I do like the offensive profile. I think that power-wise, it's above average, closer to plus than a 55 from the pull side. The swing from the pull side is geared a little bit more towards creating loft and leverage, and that's where the majority of the juice comes from. But I really like the feel for the barrel and the bat-to-ball skills, and like he crushes heaters. I think last year he hit 396 against 92 plus. And like, I think right now, like when you get him at his best, you could leave the yard with a six on the hit and a 55 on the power. And in reality, it's probably 255s across the board. So like, if you're picking at the top of the board.
Yeah. I want that hit power. If that's what it is, I'm excited about that.
Yeah. Like I might be a little bullish on it, but it's probably 55-55, or 55-50. But like, if you're not picking at the top where you've got Kurtz and Caglione, and granted those two are really impossible to replicate, if I'm picking in the middle of the second round, mid to late second round, and Ethan Anderson's on the board, or even in the early part of the third round and Anderson's on the board, like that's a really good get for where you're drafting him. So I'd be shocked if he doesn't have a really productive year at UVA. Again, it's weird in talking about all of these juniors and draft eligible guys, because for outside of an external pressure standpoint, like the hardest part of their competition is done, because you're talking about guys who played on the Cape in the summer or with USA. So they just they kind of just have to keep doing what they're doing collegiately. So I feel confident in Anderson to do that.
Yeah. Well, any other players or topics you want to hit on before we get out of here, Peter? I don't have too much more I want to get over. I'm mostly just excited to keep doing this podcast throughout the year and actually like ready for games to get going. We're going to have like six podcasts before we actually have games. So we're going to have to find some stuff to talk about.
I know, you and me both. We might, potential spoiler alert, but we could, on a weekly basis, we could cover like a different position or like a category or a specific tool, which could be fun. But one other guy that I think could really soar up boards is UC San Diego right-hander Ryan Forcucci. I actually got a text from an advisor on him way back last fall of 2022, saying like, this guy's for real, kind of tipping me off a little bit. But I love the fastball. It's 93-95, but it's been up to a 6 and a 7. I love the shape of it. It's got big time riding life through the zone, and a 24% miss rate, which was solid last year. I'd say it's a comfortable 55 type of pitch. It jumps out of the hand, and then he's got advanced feel for a mid-80 slider. He manipulates the shape well from what I've seen on video. It's got late bite and sharp two-plane break. It's also above average. I think the key for him is just going to be the continued development of a third pitch, as is the case with all of these guys that are looking to establish themselves as bona fide starters. But
yeah,
with Forcucci, like, he's a great mover. The delivery is really clean and easy, low effort. Like, he screams like he screams solid three starter. Eventually, that's what type of upside I think he has. And I think, again, he's a guy out west that I think is really going to turn some heads. And he's got, I think I tagged him in my tweet as a top or stuck the top five round label on him. But I mean, I think he's got a chance to go closer to the third than he does the fifth, and a potential dark horse at this point to maybe be like a late day one guy. But like right now for me, he's third to fifth comfortably.
Nice. Well, I know one thing. There's not a lot that I do know, but I know one thing. There will be a lot of shuffling and a lot of movement on draft board throughout the spring. That's the case every year. It is particularly the case this year. And just seeing who goes out and performs and tweaking this list throughout the spring is going to be a blast. And I really can't wait for it. And getting on this podcast and talking to you about these players, Peter, has me even more fired up. So if you guys are as fired up about college baseball, the draft cycle starting to get really rolling here, let us know. Send us any questions. Maybe we'll do a mailbag at some point before season gets off. If you guys have any like questions about players, questions about the class as a whole, questions for Peter or me specifically, like I think that could be fun to do as well. So yeah, let us know, give us some feedback on the show. What do you guys want to hear? We'll do our best to bring it to you because these podcasts are going to keep coming in the new year. Peter, anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
Yeah, that was I love the idea of a mailbag. My DMs on Twitter are open. So again, feel free to slide in there with what you want to hear, even just to chop it up. I mean, we say it all the time. We go for hours on this thing, but I'm happy to chop it up even in my DMs. But I'm really excited for what's to come. I've got one more freshman spotlight piece tomorrow. I could really keep going with him, but this guy I felt like I omitted initially, and it's Dylan Vig from the University of Michigan. He's going to be in their weekend rotation as a freshman and maybe even their headliner. And he's got Big Ten freshman of the year type stuff and type ability. So that'll be out by the time you're listening to this. And then looking to next week, I'm going to have out not necessarily a top 10, but similar to the coaching board, the assistant coaching hot board I did, just 10 mid-major non-power five draft guys. And I hate the non-power five and the mid-major label, but I literally don't know what else to title it other than that.
Hey, so yeah, people know what you're talking about. I don't think it's as much
guys
of a pejorative
that aren't like
as you
ACC,
think.
SEC, Pac-12. So like, spoiler alert, it's going to be Sirota, Yesavage, guys like that. So those are immediately down the pike, and then continuing with both the draft podcast, both in the off season and then through the draft cycle, and getting back into the college podcast with Teddy. So in your feeds, you will have on Thursdays the college pod, and then on Fridays the draft pod.
Yeah, beautiful. Should get you set up for each weekend in college baseball. On my end, and I think Peter will be helping out with a number of these things, but we'll have a top 200 draft expansion coming for the 24 class prior to the college season. We've got our preseason All-America ballots out. Scouting directors are currently voting on those, so preseason All-America teams for college and high school will be out in the next month or so. I'm excited to do some pieces plotting contact, exit velocity, chase rates among college hitters. I also want to look into some maybe fastball shape analysis for college pitchers. I think that could be fun. We'll maybe have some posts on sleepers, guys who could jump up this spring. I know you guys always love sleepers. We put out a ranking of a top 100, and you guys want to know who's 101 and 102. So definitely feels like it'd be worth doing a post like that. Maybe me and Peter can try and come up with a few players and see who has the better sleepers. But certainly lots of content coming for BA. January is always a huge month for us on the site, on the amateur side and on the pro side as well. I mean, the top 100 will be coming out shortly. I think after I get off this podcast, actually, I have to send in my top 150 for our preliminary top 100 meeting. So tons of stuff for that. I think top 30s are going to be coming out. The handbook, I think this month at some point, the digital version of the prospect handbook will be available. So if you guys are drafting for fantasy and you want that information, or you're just really itching to get your hands on the prospect handbook in general, definitely order that through us at Baseball America, on the online store. You can have that in your hands pretty quickly. I don't know the exact date that's coming out, but I've been told it's January. So at some point this month, that will be ready for you, and as well as a ton of other stuff. So thank you guys for hanging out. Thanks for listening. He's Peter. I'm Carlos. We'll see you guys next week. So long.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.